I'd like to try a little exercise with you. It will require silence, because I don't want to give it away, see? So I'm going to show you some words, and I'd like you to listen and read each of the words, but then try to figure out what language it is, and then translate it in your head. This will make sense. Let me try this one, but without saying anything. Maybe if you think you know what it is, you could wink. Okay, ready? Marhaban. I'll give you a hint. It's Arabic. Don't say anything. Okay, let's try another one. Ni hao. Oh, no. Some are starting to wonder what that one is, okay? But don't say it out loud. I don't want to give it away because some are still working on this. Okay, and another one. I learned this one in high school. Strastvuyte. We got that up there, okay? Kairete. That one's Greek, actually. Try another one. Ciao. Now you're starting to realize what these words mean. What is that little N? It's just snuck in there. I don't know. Okay, getting ready for another one? Namaste. That's Hindi, by the way. Let's try Japanese. Konnichiwa. And this one's, if you haven't gotten it yet, this one will give it away for sure. This is French. Bonjour. Okay, now you can say out loud, what do each of these words mean? Hello. 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 The word we use when we greet one another, the way that we begin conversation, start to initiate a relationship with another person, it is this human way of being together, of communicating. It is the most fundamental and sort of basic form of interaction between persons. Thanks. There's some statistical analysis among Protestant Americans published in the most recent Lutheran magazine that back in 2013, 86% of pastors in Protestant congregations, 86% of pastors in Protestant congregations 5 years ago said that their congregations were mostly made up of one predominant racial group. Now, that's not a surprise. There was significant change from 2013 all the way now to 2018. Those same pastors, now 81% of them say that the congregations they serve are mostly made up of one ethnic group. I want to show you a picture. This group is the most ethnically diverse of religious groups in the United States. This collection of people of faith have that distinction of the most variety of ethnic presence in the life of... But do you know who they are? The Seventh-day Adventists. It's very interesting. Very interesting. Do you know what denomination in the United States has the least diversity of all? Lutherans. Lutherans. Now, that's not just a Lutheran thing. I wonder if that's emblematic of so many of the groupings and communities within the country. There's a tendency for us to seek out our own. We just feel most at home, right? We tend to find one another. We look for those who are my people who are my color, my roots, my party, my neighborhood, my story. We sort of avoid anybody who doesn't fit in, you know, they're in another lane or something. Both biblical theologians and anthropologists agree that human beings look for equilibrium in our gatherings, in our groupings, in our communities. We naturally, instinctively, almost automatically look for uniformity and compliance. Even on a subconscious level, we look for predictability and adherence to the norms of the group. If somebody starts to act out of that, it makes what happens to anxiety? goes right up, right? There's an old Latin phrase, do you know it? Status quo. Status quo, it's the stasis or the state of things. And the truth is that those on the top of the power hierarchies in those systems want to keep things just like they are. It's to their advantage to keep all those arrangements, all those definitions and relationships as they are, because you don't want to rock the boat. Things are fine. Let's leave them as they are. We're motivated to keep and conserve, to maintain and sustain things in that sort of order and stack and pattern. I read this week the story of the brand new lawyer. He had just graduated, and he got a job at a nice firm downtown, and he had a brand new office and a pressed suit and a starched shirt. And on his first day of work, he goes into his office, and he sits down behind this grand desk and sort of wanted to help people perceive him as important and, you know, a member of the team. So he's there, and suddenly some fellow walks into his office. And so very quickly, this brand new lawyer snaps and grabs the phone off the desk, and he starts to talk. He says, "Look, Harry, about the amalgamation deal, I don't think $3 million will be enough. I think we should go down to the factory myself, and I can show those guys how it's done. Quick, call Rogers from New York and tell him to meet me there." And then he hangs up the phone, and he looks at the fellow who just came in, and he says, "Well, so what can I do for you?" "Well, nothing, sir. I'm just here to connect your phone." We upset the status quo, right? The expected arrangement, the ways that we define one another and hold one another and relate to one another. Well, the status quo needed interrupting in the book of Acts. This small band of Jesus followers were huddled up in a place where they were, the text says, staying. They were in stasis. They were in their own kind of status quo. Maybe they were there because they were settled. Maybe they were there because they wanted to avoid others, fearful in some way, or maybe it was because they were just complacent, but they seemed to be right where they wanted to be. Everyone in their place, everyone calm, everyone organized. They had been working hard, and they had learned how to fit in. They had learned how to fit in with the prevailing culture of Roman occupation. They learned how to fit in with the prevailing culture of the temple system that seemed to format everything about their community and their religious practice. It was fine. Don't rock the boat. Right? Martha and the Marys and Peter and James and John were all just trying to get along, to not stand out and not be conspicuous. Luke uses the word suddenly to describe what happened next. In Greek, it's the word aphno. It's a surprise. What comes about is something like a clap of thunder on a warm summer day. No warning, no expectation. It's just all of a sudden, there's a mighty wind, a roaring, mighty wind. And then, remarkably, tongues as of fire. People began to speak in ways that they'd never heard before. There was ecstatic speech. There was this kind of unintelligible commentary going on. People out loud making sounds that must have seemed like a weird mass insanity. Now remember, it was convention time, right? It was the festival. It was the festival of Pentecost. It was 50 days after the Passover. Folks were in town. It was the great harvest, the great celebration, and all the hotels were full and the restaurants were going nuts and all the bars were open. It was that kind of day when all of a sudden, Parthians and Medes and Elamites and Mesopotamians, Judeans, Cappadocians, people from Pontus and Asia and Phrygia and Pamphylia and Egypt and Libya, folks from the Cyrene and Rome and Cretans and Arabs, each hearing what sounded to the disciples like nonsense. And yet they were hearing God's deeds of power. I wonder if there were really two miracles that day, not just the miracle of Martha and the Marys and Peter and James and John and the other 100 who were huddled up them with them. If the first miracle was them their capacity to talk differently, but if the second miracle was for people to hear differently, for people from all over the world to make sense of something that wouldn't have been clear otherwise. Maybe that's what happens when the status quo gets interrupted and violated. When we get challenged, when we get stirred up or move from our complacency, there's a kind of agitation and a transformation of the system and the ways that we relate to one another. I want to suggest that it really is about a crisis. And often that's what it takes for us to get out of our way. But Luke says that they were amazed and perplexed and bewildered. I talk to people sometimes in the best and the worst times of their lives, on days when babies are born, and in days when something else happens. And in those earthquakes of the soul, people describe to me this feeling of disorientation. It's a time for them that makes it hard to think, hard to make decisions, hard to remember what to do, hard to understand what might be coming next. Luke's description of the event is something like that. Luke goes on, though, to describe some of the details. And, it didn't take long, and they encounter resistance. Because folks who were witnessing all of this, they saw this spectacle, and they sneered. They sneered, and they dismissed them with a motion like that. And what did they say about them? They're filled with new wine. I smile each year when this particular text comes up because, as Peter gets up then after all the complaining, he says, "Oh, these people are not drunk as you suppose because it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, happy hour's at 5. You know, but soon that resistance is more than just sneering. It's more than just ridicule. Pretty soon there is shunning and exclusion and scapegoating and even violence. And Stephen, one of those beloved 100, is killed in the street. These spirited people persist. And even in the face of this kind of hostility, they keep going. They had a message. They had something to say. That in this Jesus, God is at work changing the world. And they had values that seemed quite uncharacteristic of the culture of the day. There was love one for another. There was inclusivity of all flesh. The text says sons and daughters, the young and the old, the slaves and the free. Some willingness to cross lines. Lines of race and ethnicity and politics. There was a commitment to women. There was tolerance of children. There was compassion and healing and all the things that Jesus had done and said himself. That set apart this group in all kinds of ways. And even in the midst of their values and their message, there was another consequence. This movement took place. And as you read the text, you wonder if it was because they were chased out of town or they just left. Is there a push and a pull in all of that? But whatever the case, God's people went from one place to another. They went over borders. They went past the fence. They went on and erased the lines between them and us. And others got caught up in this procession. They loved and prayed and shared and marched and moved and would not stop. Well, that brought about one crisis after another. New collisions between old and new, between the privileged and the vulnerable, between the power holders and the change agents. It's an old story, but of course it's kind of a new story too, that God's Spirit is agitating, pushing and blowing and moving us with new words of hope and joy and love in our mouths. So if I say marhaban, if I say ni hao, kairete, ciao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, hello. Maybe it's God saying hello. God saying hello in a language we don't know yet. That you and I bumping into our neighbors, bumping into those who are so different from ourselves, it's really God trying to get our attention, trying to get reacquainted with God's beloved ones, trying to change my life and yours, hold us all close again with spirit and water and love and purpose and future and hope.